Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is me, Jonathan Alexander, and I'm here to host our show, Life, Laughter, Happiness. Today, I have my co-host, Barbara, here. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, everybody.
And me, this is your series. Why don't you introduce the playmate we have here today?
Okay. Well, thank you, Johnny. We are continuing our fabulous Playboy Playmate series. We have one of the most iconic Playboy Playmates out there. And I love the Playmates from the 80s. So welcome to the show, Miss March 1984, Donna Spear. Hi, Donna.
Thanks. Hi, Barbara. Thanks for having me. Thanks for having me, Johnny. I'm grateful to be here today.
Oh,
you're welcome.
We are so grateful to have you. You are welcome and thank you. Okay, there's a lot about you that is very interesting, especially what you do, especially what you're doing currently as an interventionist. But hold on. Yes, that is something very important that you do, but we're going to get into all of that. First question we always start off with is the question that I have gotten more than any other question about regarding Playboy, and that is, Donna, how did you become Playboy? What?
Can I guess it?
You want to guess it?
I want to guess it. Let me guess. There's three questions we always get. Have you been to the mansion? Do you know Hef, or how'd you get into Playboy? Was it one of the three?
Yes, it is. It's the last one. The last question. How did you become a Playboy Playmate? I mean, but you are so right. I get that all the time. But I just think, well, of course we've met Hef. I mean, what do you think? You know, who do you think we are? We're his playmates, right?
That would be kind of strange.
But I get that a lot. I do.
Hold on.
Let her make her reply, and then we'll ask her something else. Go ahead, Donna.
Our whole lives, Barbara, those are the questions people always ask us as playmates.
Anytime
I traveled as a playmate, those were always the questions. So how I became a playmate was back in the 80s, it was during hiatus, during the summertime, and things were really, really slow. And I had an agent who lived across the street, and I had gone to him, as we're going to get into my story a little bit, I had actually, it's funny, I was 18 years old. This was back in 1982. I had just gotten out of rehab, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
I had been missing for a couple of months. And I had gone to my agent, and I had told him, and I said, what's going on? He said, Donna, everything's dead. It's hiatus, nothing. It's not pilot season. But Playboy is looking for their 30th anniversary girl. And I went, you know, I never thought about Playboy. It's something that I've never been interested in. And, what would my father think? And so we went across the street and we went to Le Dome for lunch. And he kept pushing it and kept pushing it and kept pushing it. And he goes, why don't we just go over and talk to him? So, you know.
And you were Donna.
Yeah, we were right on Sunset Boulevard.
And so you were having lunch. And was this with your father, did you say? You were discussing
this
with him?
No, I was with an agent.
Oh.
I was with an agent.
Okay.
And I said, you know, my head was saying, what would my father think? That's why I couldn't do Playboy. And so as we sat through lunch at Le Dome, he kept saying, well, you know, we'll talk to him. Why don't we just, I mean, this is all in one day. Why don't we go talk to him? So finally, by the end of lunch, he called Marilyn Grabowski, and we literally walked down Sunset Boulevard into Playboy the same day.
Wow.
And when I got there, they said, why don't we take some Polaroids? And I was like, And they pulled, what was her name? She was the centerfold right before me, Lisa, I can't remember her name, off of her her gatefold set and popped me in there and took a couple of 8x10 centerfolds, 8x10 Polaroids.
Oh, lucky. Not just the regular Polaroids. It was all set up, beautiful lighting, nice studio. How perfect.
Exactly. And I got a call that night, and they asked if they could test me the next day. It happened.
Wow.
That
okay. This goes down as like the fastest one that I've ever heard of. Like how fast it happens.
Isn't that crazy? I showed up there the next morning for clothing and fitting. And next thing you know, I'm standing on Sunset Boulevard with hot rollers in my hair waiting for, you know, them to pick me up. And they had a house rented, and we went and test shot. And it happened that quick. I mean, I never even got a chance to really think about it.
If it could only happen that quickly with everybody. But that story, that's going down in history, right, Johnny? It's the fastest one. I mean, we've heard a lot of stories.
Yeah.
I thought Nariah's was fast, but I mean, this is amazing. And plus, you hadn't even dreamt of it as a little girl. You said you hadn't even thought about being a Playboy Playmate, but look how it just landed right in your lap.
I never thought that I was Playboy Playmate material, to be honest. That was never.
Well, you were only 18. Like when you're in high school and you just graduate from high school, it's not like you're thinking along those lines anyway, really. I mean, did you ever seen Playboy much before?
Of course. We'd all as kids seen Playboy. You know, my dad had it in between the mattresses. You know, we've all seen Playboy as kids.
Right.
But I never, ever thought, you know, I've done some commercials, I've done some modeling, but I never thought I was glamorous enough to do Playboy.
So Playboy, in your mind, you just thought it was glamour, 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 but in your mind, it really wasn't. What was in your mind? It's more about you. It's about the girl next door.
Right. It was for the it was for the real models. It was for the grown-up models. It was for, I didn't see myself as that quality, if that makes sense.
Well,
because I was in a little girl's mind.
Well, you were only 18.
Right. We shot in July, and I was published in March.
Oh, my goodness.
So,
a very short time after. You know, it takes, I asked him about that. How soon can it be physically possible to, you know, shoot it and then have it published? Well, it takes 3 months of just printing it and getting everything together with the articles and things like that, how the magazine, that issue is going to be. It takes a full 3 months. So if you were July, August, September, October, they had pretty much the magazine done, but then just a few short months after that, you were like on the newsstand shelves. I mean, did you even have, you said you didn't have a lot of time to think, but after a few months you were thinking, did you have to warn your dad or your mom come out?
So I remember when I test shot, I didn't tell anybody because I just didn't think that I would really make it.
Really?
I didn't think I'd make it. And so I test shot for the whole day at some really, like, fancy house in the Hollywood Hills. I mean, I was shocked that, like, they rented this big house. And we test shot all day. And
just for you. Is that what
right?
You
and you know what it's like, Barbara, how many people they bring out for the shoot. I mean, you know, they have the makeup artist, and they had the photographer and the photographer's assistant, and then we have the stylist, and then they had like three other people, and then the caterers come out, and, you know, the people, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, I'm just a small town girl. I lived in Orange County an hour away, and I mean, I've done some shoots, and I've done a couple commercials, but I never done a shoot to this caliber with this many people for me.
Yeah, I know. And it makes you feel really special or, you know, kind of like wow, I don't know what to think, you know, somewhat of like almost in shock, kind of feeling.
Right, and I'm looking at the Polaroids going, wow, this is like really amazing. This is really, these shots are like, wow. You know,
did you say, wow, this is me? Oh, I got chills. Wow, I got chills from that.
Isn't that funny? And a lot of my shots from that test shooting have been published, a lot of them, which is just wild. I don't know why, but a lot of them have. And so, you know, it wasn't until maybe a week later I got the go-ahead to shoot my they called it gatefolds back then, and to shoot my gatefold. And so we went right in to shoot my centerfold. And, you know, the weird thing was it took 10 days to shoot my centerfold. They could not get my wardrobe in the background right. They just couldn't get it. They knew what the pose was for me, but they just couldn't figure it out. So
right.
It took 10 days. Yeah, it took 10 days. You know, it really wasn't, you know, by the time they cropped it down, there wasn't much of a theme. I'm just standing there. But if you look carefully, I'm standing in between glass doors, and it looks like I'm on a patio or a balcony of New York in the background, but you can't really tell. And the funny thing was, it was a really big deal because every day they had to literally sew the clothes into the set. So once I was up in the set, I was in the set.
So was it comfortable, or was it an awkward pose?
Was yours comfortable?
Oh, you know what? I just stood there. It wasn't like a lot of horror stories. That perfectly nice standing position that was not hard to do. I think I don't even remember. So it wasn't that about mine. It wasn't uncomfortable. No.
So were you on both feet?
Yes.
Okay, I was up on one foot.
Oh.
So Ball I was up
burn.
On one. Yeah. So I was up on one foot. What?
For a week.
For 10 days. Yeah, I was up on
same
one
pose.
Foot.
Oh man.
Same pose.
Yeah.
That's hard. Better than a knee, though. Better than one knee or knees. Ow, my knees, they're sensitive. Uh-huh. My feet probably hurt, but it's just not a memorable thing, but yours certainly was. And I am on the computer, and I want to look, and I'm going to while we talk, because I want to see your... Hey, you know what? I don't need the internet. I've got the Playboy Playmate book right here, which I love. Do you have one of those big white books? Of course.
I have one.
Yeah, so I'm going to look that up while we continue to talk. So back to your family. When you, did you have to warn or tell your parents or any siblings maybe that you're about to become world famous? And I don't even know if you knew that was going to happen to you as well, but I mean, you're an instant celebrity once you hit the shelves. World celebrity.
Right.
Playboy Playmate. Yes.
I have no idea. I had no clue whatsoever. You know, it happened in a whirlwind, in a vacuum. And neither did my family. So I think the hardest part was I remember the very first time I saw the issue on the stands, and I was in New York, and I was in Soho, and it was January, and it was really cold. And for some reason, this little teeny newsstand got it early, a few weeks early, and I walked by, and Susie Scott's on my cover, you know, the one with the really long hair, and I went, no, and I grabbed it, and I went back, and I read it, and so I brought it to my parents, and they had known I had shot it, but no one, you know, no one knows what it looks like inside until it's published, and I said, you know, be ready, I mean, I'm really naked.
Be ready.
Right,
you have a good
naked.
Relationship with them, though. You know,
I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really concerned about what my father thought. And what happened was the exact opposite. I come from a very simple, means family, you know, good family. They were married 60 years before one of my parents passed. And you know what happened was, was that a lot of his friends at work started bringing issues to him for me to sign. And I didn't expect that at all. Neither did he. So that was something that was kind of unexpected, but it made my dad really proud.
Yeah, so that's good. The dad seems to usually be very proud. The dads like it. The dads really like it. It's the moms that seem to be a little more concerned for their daughters.
She kind of rolled with it. She was really good about it. You know, she helped me with all the fan mail, and she helped me with all the bookings and where I had to be and where I had to go. And, you know, she was really, really good about that because, you know, Playboy put me on the road before my centerfold came out. So they had Playmate Promotions had me going on promotions that January. So
that's different.
Yeah, right?
It's not different to shoot for other things like the special editions before your layout comes out, but I've never even heard of doing the actual promotions and events when you really haven't even been published or you haven't hit the stands yet. That's amazing.
I know. Isn't that weird? I know. I don't know what was with them, but they just hustled me about. And
they started
sending me on promotions before my issue even hit the stand. And I was in New York when I found the first one, and it wasn't even on the stands, and I had done promotions prior to that. And in January, and they're not even supposed to be on the stands till February. So, you know, it just was what it was. You know, the funny thing I noticed, what the biggest change I think was when the issue came out, Barbara, was that all of a sudden Playboy that was hidden, like, you know, under my dad's bed, all of a sudden kind of sat on the coffee table now.
Yeah. It's like, hey,
in
we
our car.
Are a part of this, people. This is us now. It is
right.
Pride.
Right, we're now part of the Playboy family, and I don't know, I know you were a centerfold in 92, is that correct?
Yes, December 92.
So were the clubs were not still open when you...
Right. No, no clubs and no Playboy Bunny events at all. That happened a few years later when Hef decided to bring back the bunnies, and also I opened up the Playboy Club in Las Vegas, and that was so fun because I lived in Las Vegas at that time, and everybody who visited me, I would take them to the Playboy Club and show them such a wonderful time, and normally it would be like $40 to get in.
Right.
They weren't with me, and so that was really a fun perk for a while, and too bad they don't have that anymore.
Right. I had been to the one in New York Las Vegas, and it was fun. And so the one in LA was still happening when I was a playmate. And when you were a playmate back then, they had a big party for you there. And they did an unveiling of your centerfold on the wall. And you invited your family
nice.
Yeah, and your friends and like Arnie Freitag was there, and it was kind of a big deal, and they did a dinner and cocktails and all kinds of stuff for you back then. So it was a lot of fun, and it was a big deal. And you know, and then they gave us like a key for life, and it was pink, and it was a Playmate key.
Cute.
Isn't that amazing? It's got your name on it. It's funny. I used that Playmate key to get into the one in Las Vegas. I go, I know you've never seen this before, but I'm going to show. And they looked at me and said, wow. That, I mean, it's a great collectible.
Oh, yes. And Happy used to give us things like the beautiful little rhinestone keychains and just little things. Every Christmas, all the Playmates would get a gift from Hef. I thought that was so sweet. And I've kept all of those.
Me too. I still have mine. I still have my keychain. Do you have the little box with the bunny on it?
Yes, in perfect condition for our business cards,
I mean,
right?
I have that one too. I have that one too. What else do I have? I have the earrings and the necklace. I have a bunch of little things that they used to send us every year. It was very, very sweet of them.
Very sweet. I keep all of that stuff. I'm not going to sell that stuff. I wish I wouldn't have sold, though, a couple of my accessories when I did the 50th anniversary. And I had the, not the bunny costume on for that one, but I had the jet bunny costume on. And I did. I sold the scarf, and they had the special Playboy bunny nylons, and I sold everything on eBay. And, I wish I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, I get that, because those are real collector's items. Those are real personal collector's items. I get that. You know,
well,
I think
I just want to let you know I'm looking at Donna Spears' centerfold right now, Miss March 1984, and now I can see, well, first of all, wow, okay, yes, you are a young, beautiful, beautiful lady that is probably just coming back from a wonderful night out in the big city with the city background lights, and then you're in your penthouse apartment with your variety of different kind of liqueurs and your personal bar, and you've got one foot on the ground and the other one up, and I can see how that would hurt after 10 days. Wow.
You see on my foot where the garment is sewn onto my foot, and then it's also sewn to the back, into the set on the back. So once I got in, I was in.
Wow, that is, you know what, that kind of made it easier, though, so you knew exactly where to be to carry on from the day before.
Right.
Because people don't realize you're in the same pose. It's not like, okay, put her there in her centerfold background and let's just get her on set and let her move around. No, it's not like that for the gatefold, centerfold shoot.
No.
And tell them what it is like the first day we do pose test. Then you're on doing that same pose. And did you ever question that pose, or did you agree upon it?
They take pictures and they send them to Hef every day, and then he says yay or nay until it gets the exact way he wants it. And then once he gets what he wants, then you keep shooting until he finds the exact one he likes every day.
Every day. And I didn't even know that part. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. That's
Donna.
That
okay.
Case. Yes.
So I wanted to ask you, though, when you were, because you brought up Hef, you were shooting every day. Did Hef know you personally? Because if you were a local in California, and when you were shooting, you were just driving up from your home. Were you not, or were you staying at the Playboy Mansion?
No, I never stayed at the mansion. There was no reason for it. There was,
and that's not fair. That's not fair, though, Donna, because the girls that were already from California, they didn't really stay there overnight and have, like, the full experience of that. And I thought, well, that's kind of too bad. Did you ever think about that? Like, oh, I wish I could just, have an overnight at the Playboy Mansion.
Well, there were some days I spent there. If I was working on a film and I had a really early call, I'd come up the night before and go stay in the guest house. But then also, once the girls were done in L.A. and they went back home, I always could come and go as I pleased throughout the day. So if I was up interviewing and I had an interview at like 10 o'clock in the morning and one at 3, I'd just shoot up to the mansion for the middle of the day and hang out.
Isn't that great? Wow. People don't
understand
how much Hef gave to us. And, when we first come aboard, we're really just strangers to him. And how much did he open his home to us and just expected us to be wonderful, nice people. And nothing happened to him from the Playboy Playmates. There could have been a crazy girl. There could have been a weirdo. And there never was there?
There were a couple of incidences that I know of that we don't even need to talk about, but that wasn't, I'll tell you what, it wasn't like it is.
You can talk about it. I just
today.
Haven't heard of them. Did they try to hurt him?
There was
did anybody
there
try
was
to do
some
something
weird
to him? Like,
there were some, I don't
just
remember
be like
the name,
crazy,
but there were a couple of weird
lunatic, soccer type,
pride foul, that were a little out of hand. Were a little on the crazy side.
Really, what did they do? But they They were playmates. They weren't just people texting.
They were playmates, and they said the butlers did this or the butlers did that or, you know, things like that. I remember a big deal going on about that. You know,
and
one of the playmates.
This person was not a playmate, though?
Oh, no, she was a playmate, and she said the butlers did this or that in the marriage. She just hooked up with butlers in the grotto.
Oh,
right.
And I did hear about that one.
Do you remember now, kind of?
Yeah, I think
it
was
Pride Wolf or something. Yeah.
There was a fan. Okay, we used to go over to the Playboy offices and sometimes answer the fan mail, but actually talk to them. It was, yeah. Talk to the fans. Yes.
What was that?
We did that, but it stopped right away because that person got in trouble with that, too. That person had some kind of a crazy relationship with a fan. She carried it on outside of Playboy, and she went home, and she continued talking to this fan, and the fan became a stalker and shot her husband.
Husband, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So something like that.
Yes, exactly. So there were some weird, crazy things that went on, but that, you know, the percentage was small because you never, I mean, with all the playmates I've had, there had to be a crazy one in the bunch. I mean, one of them went on to do porn.
Two of them now.
I don't know the second one, but I mean, one from my generation. The first one and shocked the hell out of everybody.
Was
like, yes, and I mean, I knew Carrie really, really, really well. I knew her and her husband, and we'd worked together. And, you know, I mean, it was like, what? You did what?
How many years after her centerfold? How many years after her centerfold? How many years after her centerfold? What? Sorry.
Like five, maybe?
5 years, and when did Penthouse?
Right. I mean, that was just so unheard of.
Really?
It was
unheard. I know it was, but that you remember this so well that it really was a big deal, huh? And what was Hef saying? What was the Playmate Promotions department doing?
We did not even breathe a word about it. It was like, it was almost forbidden to even discuss it because back then they wouldn't. Playboy wouldn't even hire a dancer for a centerfold. If you were a stripper or a dancer, you could not become a centerfold.
I know. I do know that.
That's how strict the times were back then. It was like they didn't mess around. So when one of the girls, when Carrie became started working in pornography, it was like literally in Playmate Promotions, don't even bring it up. Don't talk about it. Don't mention her name. I remember she was advertising with the Playboy logo, you know, the rabbit head.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like voodoo. It was like unspeakable. Do not mention her name. Do not talk about it. No one's to mention it.
But, I mean, what happens if you were to run into her now? What would happen?
I've seen Carrie. I have no hard feelings. I don't judge her at all. We all have our different paths, right? I knew Carrie long before. I knew her husband who died, if I'm correct. Merle died, like, out of the blue. They were married a long, long time.
Oh.
And he, like, just died of a heart attack, just dropped dead, and I guess just rocked her world. So, you know, if I ran into Carrie, I'd greet her with a hug. I'd tell her it's good to see her. You know, I don't need to bring up what she's doing or been doing or if she still does it. It's none of my business.
Her husband die before she did Penthouse or after?
No, this was recently.
Oh, okay.
She was
wow. She was married to this guy, and so he must have been gung-ho for her to do Penthouse as well.
When I knew Terry was married to Merle, so he must have been married to her for 25 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so that is how that went down. You know, I'm wondering what was going through her mind. What made her, just after 5 years, you're still working a lot. You're still doing Playmate promotions and you are shooting. There's a lot to shoot for Playboy. Something got in her head that she wanted to do something more. And I don't know why.
I have no idea. Not a clue. You know, not a clue. And she was such a beautiful girl, you know. And, you know, I don't know.
Okay.
Everybody has their own path. You know, some of us disappear. Some of us stay in the public eye. Some of us do pornography, I guess. You know, some of us become housewives and moms and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, who knows?
Normal people. Some people take this and let it work for them and use that and enjoy it. And so you must have done that, because if you were already with an agency before modeling and, like you said, doing commercials, then this must have really catapulted you to a new level.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I was very fortunate. I worked for Playboy for 7 years. So a lot of girls after Playboy, they, you know, a lot of them will do a couple of promotions, a couple of this, that, and the other. I was fortunate enough to continue to work for them. I opened up their Argentina edition, so I got to go down to Argentina. I was their first cover and their second centerfold.
Cool.
So I did that for them. Yeah. I did that, and then I you know, I did a lot of work in Japan for Playboy. You know, I did a lot of stuff for them. I mean, Lori Hart and I worked very, I don't know if you remember Lori, but her and I worked very, very well together. And she knew I was a very dependable playmate. She knew she could depend on me for things. And so
she wasn't there. She wasn't the one that I had.
She was terrific.
Promotions director, right?
Who was there, BJ, at the time?
BJ, there was one other person right before BJ for a short time, and I don't remember her name. But it wasn't Lori. It wasn't Lori.
Okay,
but I loved BJ, thanks. Because that one person, you said you worked really well with her, the director of Playmate Promotions. You know, some people don't get as lucky as you and I did with BJ, that maybe they don't click. And you're not getting as much work if you don't click with your director. So that one person really has a lot of power.
Right. So I was very fortunate. I worked really, really well with Lori. I did okay with BJ, not as much.
That's a bummer.
I was there when BJ was just a little secretary. So before she got moved in and up, I mean, I was there. I think BJ was there like years before, and it was okay. But, you know, 7 years is a long run for a playmate.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that is what I always am saying. 7 years, and then I started conquering the dance floor, and I just had to focus on that. But that was about my run and traveling around the world and all of that. I would never have gone to some of those places like Moscow, Russia, and Taipei, Taiwan. I would never have chosen that for probably a vacation. So I think that gave us, the Playmates, who were lucky enough to be one of their foreign spokesmodels, that it just like broadened us at a very young age, you know, because traveling, it really, really gives you different perspectives into the world. And it just like you become a very well-rounded businesswoman and you're good with people. It really teaches you a lot of skills being a Playboy Playmate, doesn't it?
Exactly. I never would have traveled to the places I traveled to at that age, let alone on someone else's dollar and in the manner that we traveled in.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
That's for sure. Always
right? Right. Always taken care of, being picked up, being dropped off, being, you know, looked after, having, you know, just the things that I never would have had the experiences I had or the things that were led to had it not been for Playboy, ever.
How wonderful. I know we are very fortunate.
Right. I don't take that for granted. Now, there were some kind of bizarre things, you know, that went along with Playboy. And I wrote about that. You know, I wrote a book and I wrote a little bit about that because going to the mansion at a very weird young age, my experiences were a little different than other people's experiences. It was kind of like going up there. There were the rules of no rules. And to me, because it was like they want you to come up. And this was the years I went up, okay? And I don't know what year
wait,
experience for. I don't
wait. The year ahead. What? This was year what?
The years that I went up. Now, I believe I have
yeah,
married.
Which it, let's when, tell the listeners again. This is in the early 80s, 1984.
Right.
You were Miss March. And I was going to ask you what was Hep like. What was it like there at that time in his life? I mean, I've watched biographies and things like that, but I want to hear from you because he was not married to Kimberly at that time, was he? Because he, I think he got married like at 1990 to Kimberly. So what was he like as a single man in the early 80s?
So it was, he was always very friendly and very kind. I wasn't really tight with Hep. You got to remember, Playboy was about 50% of my source of income. So I had to use the mansion wisely. I could not, and I've been on my own since I was 17. So I had to be very careful how I conducted myself at the mansion. You know, I couldn't get involved in certain things because if I got exiled, I would lose 50% of my income. And I knew that at a young age. So,
well, that's smart of you to know.
Absolutely.
That's smart of you to be aware of that. And not
right.
to go crazy and who cares, you know, because they do care. So go on.
Yes. And so here's the deal. Back then, there used to be a gal by the name of Joni, which you probably didn't know. And she
I did
was,
know her.
Okay. I don't know how well you know. The girls kind of used to refer to as the gargoyle of the mansion. And she would show up late in the day, right? And she would make sure, you know, Hep woke up late. And she would make sure everybody was shooed out of the main house by about 4 o'clock. Okay. So what it was with the mansion was, we want you around when we want you around. And when we don't want you around, we don't want you around. But we want you around on Friday and Saturday, and we kind of want you around during that time when Hep's got his friends there, and we kind of want you around in skimpy clothes and that kind of thing. Now, you can come up anytime during the day, and it's a really wonderful situation for you, but we'd also like that first year when it's Playmate of the Year time to you to come up and politic to get Playmate of the Year and possibly a cover. So don't step on any toes and show up, but be careful. So as a young girl, to me, that was very, very mixed messages to me. So
mm-hmm.
there were rules, but no rules. So it's like, I want to get more work in the magazine because that will mean more money for me going out doing Playmate promotions and signing my name, which I knew. But I don't want to get too close to Hep or his girlfriends because his girlfriend, Carrie Lee, if she hits on me, right, and I say
yeah.
no, she can boot me out of the mansion. So it's a
what
very,
do you mean,
very.
On...
Pardon?
What do you mean, hit on
he
you?
Wants to know what you mean. Hit on you. Like, come on.
Well, back then. So back then in the 80s, you know, some of Hep girlfriends were known to be bisexual and all that. But
okay.
back there in the 80s, it wasn't as blatant as it was in the 2000s. So it was kind of under the radar. And so you had to be really careful on that. And I write all about this in my book. You have to be really
okay,
careful
please.
On that fine line.
Wait, before you go on, because this is so interesting, can you tell us what your title of your book is and where we can find it?
You can get my book on Amazon, and the book is called Naked Truth, The Fall and Rise of Donna Spear. Or
oh,
you can
wow.
get it at my website. Yeah, you can get it on my website, www.donnaspear.com.
And you spell your name a little differently, D-O-N-A, right, correct?
Mm-hmm.
D-O-N-A.
Correct.
S-P-I-E-R, S-P-I-E-R.
S-P-E-I-R, E-I-R.
E-I-R, I'm glad we went over that because I would have spelled it wrong. Okay, D-O-N-A-S-P-E, no, go ahead.
Yeah, that's it. S-P-E-I-R.
E-I-R.
God bless my parents. Couldn't I have just made one of my names easier?
I thought maybe you changed it just to be different as a Playboy Playmate.
Why would I change my name to something nobody can spell?
I don't know.
Right?
I like it, though. I do. I like it.
Donna, Fire, Spear. It's Donna with one N, Spear, E-I-E-I-R. You know, Donna Spear. It's like, what? Nope,
but it is one of the most recognizable names in Playboy history. I do know, because I didn't get to know you that well, you know, because of our different, you know, I was the 90s and I was later on.
Right.
Donna, I knew your name very well. You are one of the most popular. You are iconic, okay? You are, and people always talk about you. So when you say, oh,
really?
I work for, yes, oh, wow. When you say, oh, I worked for Playboy for many years and I was doing this promotion and that, you know what? Your name comes up so much in that conversation of working Playmates that actually shows up, is reliable, is has done tons of promotions. You know, you are very well known in that area of Playboy.
I never knew that, but thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's
no idea.
From coming from me. I mean, it's honestly... honest coming from me of names that I know in Playboy, and yours is right up there big time. I'm surprised you don't know that.
No, thank you. I don't, Barbara, I don't talk to a lot of the girls. So, you know, I came in, I worked, I pulled away, I got on with my life, I've done my thing, you know, and I just haven't stayed in touch with Playboy, Playboy or Playboy people that much.
I understand, but I want to get back to the, what you were saying, because it's so interesting. Okay, the book, I'm definitely going to get a copy of your book, and I will read it, but just tell us again, that story is amazing, though,
okay, so
that you were worried about that. Hold on, because now looking back, do you think if she really did come on to you, this Carrie girlfriend, that was known very wild, wild, wild girl. I've heard stories. And she's just like, not wild, like just crazy kind of wild, like getting a motorcycle.
She was wild.
And then he had to like take the motorcycle back. And, you know, she was just wild. Do you think that if she would have come on to you and you would have rejected her, would that have made you like not welcome there, do you think?
You know, anything was probable because she was unpredictable. I mean, I got to tell you, she was probably one of the most beautiful girls I've ever seen. She was stunning. Stunning. That girl was stunning. And she was kind. But it was like, you know, it would have been like, why don't you come up and see Hef and I? And I didn't want to get cornered by her and Hef, because if I did, and I said yes, right, which I wouldn't have, but if I said yes, then the next girl who came along, I could have been banished. But if I said no, I could have been banished. So it was walking a very fine line around the mansion to be seen, to continue to get work and stay in good graces, and not get cornered. So you had to have a really good political sense. And it was very difficult back then. I mean, I finally came out really honest. I got a couple of calls from the senior VP of Playboy, and they said, Donna, did you really feel that way when you were young? I said, absolutely, because it was the rules of no rules there. It was the unspoken rule of the mansion. We want you to show up. We want you to be sexy, and we want you to be there. But We want you to be there on our terms. And Barbara, here's a perfect example. We want you to come to our parties. We want you to come to a party at the Playboy Mansion, the best parties of the world. Well, can I bring a date? I don't know. Who is he?
Yeah, I know.
See?
Who is he? That was
a... Let us get
you know,
back
it's kind of good,
you.
Though. It was kind of good, though, for some of us who, you know, yeah, we loved our boyfriend, but, you know, maybe we needed to go alone. And because if we brought him, he would have been jealous and he would have put a damper on the whole evening because he would have said, well, who are you looking at? And I was doing nothing wrong. I mean, you know, it actually was protecting us as playmates to where we didn't have to, because all we needed to say to them was like, sorry, you're not allowed. And this is partly work.
Yes and no. Or was it about Hef wanting to have more girls for the people he knew? Or
that,
was it?
I think that
you
is
see
it.
What I'm saying? So it's kind of like, look, Playboy gave me some of the best years of my life. I am thoroughly grateful for Playboy. Don't get me wrong. But as a young girl, as I look back, it was very confusing.
Yeah, because you were so young, too. You had nothing.
Right.
You went from high school, basically, to a meeting on Sunset with your agent, and then it all happened, and you were thrust into this crazy mansion home, rules with no rules, and you were 18, okay?
Right.
I was put together with Echo. She was 18, and I was 24. There was a lot of difference, and she attests to that now. We're really good friends. She said, 18 years old, I didn't have all the business. I didn't have any kind of experience, really. And I had 24 years old, you know, I was already a flight attendant for a couple of years. I already modeled. I traveled, you know. I mean, when you said your mom was helping you answer your fan mail, it was like, oh, my gosh, you're just a little girl.
I was a baby. I went walking in. Tuesday, I test shot, and Sunday, I was at the Playboy Mansion with Marilyn Grabowski.
That's crazy. That's a lot. And there's nobody there saying, okay, now how are you feeling? What are your thoughts? So you can tell me you're not going to ruin your position. You know what I mean? There's no therapy. I mean, people didn't even do much of that back then. Therapy,
like,
right?
Boom.
You're a Playboy counselor.
Right. I never got a chance to process, like, what I was even getting myself into because I had no clue. It all turned out great. It was a wonderful experience. As I look back, there were a lot of things that were like, that's a little bizarre. And I had a lot of fear. What? Oh, yeah.
Are all of
your
thoughts in your book?
Absolutely. And it's not like I said Playboy was a bad experience. Playboy was not a bad experience. I had some of the funniest experiences in the world. I met the greatest people. I traveled a great deal. And because of Playboy, I did a lot of things I never in the world would have done. But it also had, like, as looking back as an adult, looking back at me as a child, it was pretty bizarre. And it's okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because it hadn't.
But, you know, I think they had a lot of great departments, very nice people working there. Like you said, it's a family atmosphere inside. It's a little quirky, but how could it not be, right? But, you know, they made sure that you weren't abused. I mean, that was crazy stuff to go through, and me too. But...
yeah,
we're adults, right? And they treat us. We're a company. You're our assets. We will be good to you. But you know what? They can't hold your hand through the whole thing. But I find it so interesting, the detailed stories of actually our thoughts, not just, oh, this happened, this, that, and the other, but the actual thoughts of what you felt when you went through it, which I did not know that you have written this book. So... I mean, I'm getting chills all over. I just can tell. It's kind of read. It's probably, you probably have a lot of interesting stories in there. When did you write it?
I wrote the book. It came out last June, a year ago, June. And then I did my book tour, and I've done a ton of speaking engagements. I was actually booked all the way through June.
Let me get to that right now, and I don't mean to cut you off, and I want you to give us your schedule, but this is what I was saving for last, everybody.
My speaking engagements, Barbara, my very last one was March 15th, and I was in Mexico, but because of COVID, I have been asked.
I know. But
yeah, so which is fine.
Forever.
I mean, I was booked all the way through January out in Antigua. But
that's totally cool. And you'll be able to schedule those, right?
I'm sorry?
Will you be able to reschedule those?
Oh, yeah. So we'll see what happens. You know, right now, it's fine. We'll see what happens. I'm sure, you know, a lot of people have gotten back with me. I mean, I've still got a couple of speaking engagements in September that they, you know, we're going to see what happens in Florida, some pretty big ones as keynote speaker and such. And we will see what happens in January, the ones in Antigua. Yeah.
Donna.
Yeah.
Nobody even knows what we're talking about. So I just want to, you're awesome and you're so put together and I love talking to you and it's been so great, but I don't want to go on and on. If these guys out here have not even heard about what you do now, which is you are an interventionist. Tell us about that. That's the chapter of your life I was saving for last, and it's important. And that'll lead into where you're speaking, correct?
Okay, so let me tell you what I do now. I am in the recovery field of drug and alcohol abuse. After I shot Playboy, when I turned 23, I got clean and sober. So I've been clean and sober for 33 years now. Part of my book is about my recovery.
Great. And but didn't you mention that earlier about you were in recovery right before you shot for Playboy, right? Correct?
Right. And then I went back out for 3.5 years. Yeah.
But then what back 3.5 years did you stay on track the whole time? What happened?
I relapsed.
How much longer after?
After a year of sobriety, I relapsed for 3.5 years.
So a year into Playboy, did it have anything to do with the pressure of working with Playboy, or what happened, do you think?
I picked up my first drink during my small camera shoot in Cancun, Mexico.
It's too bad. Did you tell anybody you were a recovered person? Like, did anybody around you working, did you keep that quiet, or did they know that you were recovered? Did you just not have any help or anybody to – did somebody offer you something? What?
Back in 1982, it wasn't exactly a popular thing to do, was get sober. No one knew about sobriety back then. It was way before Betty Ford.
Oh, really?
When I finally got sober in 1987 again, Betty Ford wasn't even up. That's how long ago I got sober. So my issue came out when I was 19, and I got sober finally for good when I was 23 in 1987.
And then that was such a wonderful experience that you started to become an advocate for it.
Right.
And now tell us what you do. This is really amazing.
So now
you help
what
so many
I do,
people.
I mean, I've done a lot of things. I mean, I've opened up a nonprofit in Newport Beach that is a shelter for women to go for 30 days to get clean and sober who have no money. And they can go there for 30 days and they can get housed and fed and clothed and sober. It's called thelinhouse.com. And to this day, it's been open, let's see, 1929, 30, it's been open now 14 years. I was the original founder, and it's had over 2,500, yeah, 2,500 people, women go through. So I did that.
That's
and
amazing.
So I'm an advocate for women in sobriety. It's the best.
And just think, without all of that experience that you had, and, you know, it's a testimony. I bet your testimony is something that people will never forget. And you know what? It's worth sometimes every bad thing that we go through. If we could help somebody later through the same thing, or not even get to that point, it's all worth it. To me, I think that.
Right.
Do you feel like that? If you even help one person, save one person's life, and you've probably saved a lot more, how wonderful and fulfilling.
Right. So my biggest liabilities have become my greatest assets.
Wow, is that your quote?
Yeah.
I like your
quote.
Yeah,
well, that's one of them.
Donna Spear, I love that. We will put that up on your link to this show, which people can listen to on YouTube about an hour after we close the show. That's where you can find it, which is going to be awesome. And then I'll send it all around. But Donna, I love it, and I love that you wrote a book. And did you say you were writing another one?
No, I'm not writing another book, not right now. I've got my hands full with, I am a sober coach, which means actually a recovery coach is what I am, which I help women and men now online, either in their early recovery or mid or later recovery, to help them get over hurdles that they haven't been able to do. I do that. I also represent what they call sober companions. So if you're looking for a sober companion or a coach, you can look me up at donnaspear.com. I'm the CEO of Recovery Coaching Experts. So I do that, and, you know, I go out and I speak a lot on recoveries at hospitals and various places. And
Do we buy tickets for the speaking engagement?
Well, right now, everything is on hold because of COVID.
Oh, that's what you're saying, of course. But
which is fine.
Back a few times, right, Donna? Like mine.
Pardon?
I was going to do a few events too. I was going to do some kind of a race car thing in Vegas. It was postponed two times, and a golf event that I was doing has been postponed. Everything was supposed to be going in June, and then now it's postponed to October. So, but at least eventually we're going to do it, and then we're doing other things. Don't you feel like you kind of like this time where you can do other things like projects and maybe something new, and, you know, what you're doing online, and people can call and get help, because that's how people do it. They do it with Zoom, BlueJeans platform, some kind of video platform, or the phone. So that's amazing. How many people do you think you handle per week?
So all of my coaching is done online anyway, because I do it nationally, which has been fun. So my business has actually taken off. It's been amazing. I am very, very busy as a recovery coach.
That's awesome.
Right. Because of COVID, a lot of people have been really struggling in their lives, which is understandable. Loneliness. A lot of people treat loneliness with isolation, and the isolation is killing them right now. What I do know is that this time has actually been wonderful. I haven't had a problem with being home whatsoever.
Are you with anybody? I mean, you don't have to say if it's a private thing, but, or, I mean, some people would be very lonely. I have my daughter. No?
I am.
Are you totally alone?
No, I'm happily married. We just sold our home in Silicon Valley. We're moving to Scottsdale, and I'm in the midst of packing up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
going to
go out
there
and
pretty soon.
That's
wonderful.
Playing
golf. I'm so happy for you. And you do the golf?
Absolutely. I'm excited. And
Donna,
you know, I have a
Donna.
Donna,
at least you guys can continue to play golf, because you don't have to touch people with that sport. And it is a sport. And I was thinking of taking it up. There's a golf course right mm-hmm. across the street here in Huntington Beach, California. And you were mentioning that you have a facility in Newport Beach, right?
It's in Costa Mesa. Yeah.
Okay. Well, when you're down here doing business with it, please let's get together. That would be great. I'm right here in Huntington Beach. I just moved here from L.A. via Gilbert, Arizona, 2 years. That was very hard. But I am here where I want to be. And Johnny and I do this show all the time. We're into positivity and supporting those who are doing things like charity or good things to help people. And you're one of them, right, Johnny?
Yes.
Okay, Johnny, right?
I'm right here.
What happened to him?
No, I had mine on mute.
Right, Johnny? We want to promote people who are who have books, who can help
That's
people.
Right.
Okay. I might as well do the shout out about the television show at the same time with Donna, because don't you agree, Johnny? She has a lot she could contribute to our Learn channel on Roku. Donna, we have a new TV channel, and you can find it on Roku, called Life, Laughter, Happiness, Learn.
Why don't you tell her about the thing with Hugh Hefner? Do you want to tell her about that? Or is that still the planning
stages? Oh, first I want to ask you, when you were doing your centerfold and all the Playboy shoots back then, who was your makeup artist?
His name was Clint.
Oh, yes. Yes. I think I met him one time, and then he was gone. And did you like him? He was
he was great. He was hilarious.
And his personality?
Marianne Gravatt's makeup. I remember that.
Ooh. I love it.
Anyway.
The 80s were gorgeous. The 80s were gorgeous centerfolds. I just love looking at them. That's probably one of my favorite eras of Playboy. Did you see on Amazon Prime Video, there is a wonderful series. It's called The American Playboy. No, not The American Playboy. Have you seen that?
No.
Johnny, have you?
Nope.
Oh, it is amazing. I remember right before Hef died and Cooper... He was working on it, and there was, like, the buzz about it, you know? And it was going to be, like, kind of like Mad Men and a documentary, but it's a series. It's scripted with actors intermittently, perfectly timed. They would have, like, the real footage of the same time and place of Hef, you know, there. And they recreated it, and there were so many with the Playboy Bunny costumes, so looking beautifully shot. I love this. I've been trying to tell people on Twitter, and I told people on the show a few times, people, I recommend it, and it's very good, and you would love it. And it takes you through from when Hef got married to Millie in the 50s and the start of Playboy throughout things that, I'm sure you've seen all the biographies and stuff, too. You probably read all the books. But then this is a few other little new things that you would not maybe know. And I just found it very well made. I highly recommend it. It's Hef, and it shows the years of the 50s, then the 60s. And then, you know, like all the press and it would show him, you know, I mean, he went through a lot of hell, too. And then the 80s, when you were talking about some of your experiences being an 80s playmate, I always wondered, okay, what was Hef like in the 80s? What was their relationship like with him? You just go watch this series I binge watched it over like 3 days. I watched the whole series.
Really?
It has series. Yeah, and it's really cool music. It is really well done. I mean, I personally thought, oh, God, couldn't they have found a guy who looked more like Hef. I mean, this guy was tall, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they scoured the casting agents for it. I don't know.
So
I mean, you tell me.
It's on Amazon.
It's it's on Amazon Prime Video. So if you have Prime, you get it free, you know. It comes with it. That's good. Good. Oh, you can watch it then. You can watch it tonight.
What's the name, Barbara?
American Playboy.
American Playboy. Okay, I'll have to. I'll look it up. American Playboy.
Yeah. Fun in the 80s. You might even see yourself.
Oh, funny. I have not watched any of the Playboy series or anything on TV of Half or Playboy, just, you know, probably because we lived it. I know what it's about. I've been there.
I get it. And you know what? It's kind of like they weren't very well done back then. These little snippets that they put together of his interviews, and it's like, then it's not connected to, well, what was the magazine really doing at the time? It's just now the way people are producing these documentaries and the docuseries and this kind of new way. It's so enjoyable. It's entertainment. Aww. I loved it. I'm going to watch it again, actually.
Oh, good. I'll have to check that out. I wrote the name down.
Okay, so back to you, though. We were talking a lot about your speaking engagement and various different places that you were going and a big, huge schedule to the coronavirus you are unable to do. But then your business of consulting and counseling. People who just really need your help that are addicted to drugs and alcohol. And say I have some, because I do know somebody that could really benefit from this, a woman. Where would I call? Where is there like a 1-800 number, or do I just go to your website?
You go right to my website at donnaspear.com, and there's a place to contact me, and I will get right back with you, and it's confidential. Everything is confidential. I don't do counseling. I'm a coach. It's a lot different. I'm not a therapist. We do not the difference between a therapist and a coach is a therapist will talk about your past, and a coach works with your future. We talk about the here and the now and where you want to go.
Oh, I love it.
We set goals and we work toward them. It's all about positive and moving forward. It's not about your family, your parents, the child within, or anything like that. There's people who do that intense work, which is wonderful. I'm not that person who does that.
You're offering so much just by being there. That gives them, they come through your door. They talk to you. You're offering them hope. We cannot do anything if we're in such despair where there's nobody, nowhere to turn. And you are offering a place for anybody to turn. It is a wonderful organization. It is a wonderful thing you do. And how much does it cost?
You know what? I only discuss payments with clients. I don't mean to be rude or sound fishy about that, but I only discuss fees with clients. I do some pro bono work with certain people, depending upon who they are and their needs. So, you know, it just depends. I do take
people. So, pardon? It's a free consultation. You'll listen for, will you listen to anybody for free, or do you not have a free consultation, or is it an email?
I do a free 15-minute consultation, and we'll talk about what your needs are. And what you're really looking, we need to make sure we're a good fit, because if I'm not a good fit for you, I want to find the best person possible for you. And I have a calling I can refer you to. Or if I really think maybe a therapist would be better for you or something like that. I am not the end-all of end-alls. But if we feel we can help each other or I can help guide you to where you want to be, then it's a good match. You know, there's a lot of people out there. I don't do what we call recovery for profit. There's a lot of people who do that. I'm not one of those people.
There is a free part to it, which is cool.
Right. Here's what I'm trying to say, Barbara. I charge for my service, okay? But I'm not here to take money from you if we're not a good fit.
Right. That's not your... not going by the money. You're going by the good of it.
The integrity.
Yes, and you're helping people, and that just would get in the way. You know, so of course I understand.
Right.
Of course I would never expect you to not be that way, so that's wonderful. But it's some people don't know, so that's good that you do say. Yeah,
right.
Very good.
So... yeah, especially in the recovery community right now, there's a lot going on that is not quite in the integrity business. And so, you know, I really try and work with a full mind of integrity here in my company and with my business partner. And so it has to be a good fit, and we have to be really clear on what you're looking for when it comes to coaching.
Okay, so what would be the first, say I made it through the initial, you know, profile that, okay, I am a good fit with you. What would the first question be to me that you would have?
Okay, so I would have you do a little bit of writing, and I'd ask you, I want to know 10 things of what you want. Barbara, what is it you want?
What if they say, I don't have 10 things? I don't know. I'm too depressed. I don't have 10 things. I don't love 10 things. Oh, my gosh, this is too much work. Like that.
Okay. And then I would come back with, you know what? I completely understand that. I would understand why that feels overwhelming. Okay. So let's break it down. We're going to start with 5 things you want. So let's start with, you don't want to be overwhelmed. So what is not being overwhelmed?
Oh, I love that. Every thing that they say to you or question back with you, then you have a very good kind of neutral answer, but straightforward, but in a gentle way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really nice. I like it. People need that a lot, especially now with dealing with so much with the loss of, they feel like they aren't free to walk around. I mean, sometimes I do get teared up outside when I just kind of look around at people walking around with masks on coming and going from the grocery store. And I just think, wow, is this really happening? I'm like, ooh, that's heavy. You know, I mean, people are going through a lot. And what about the ones that actually losing somebody right now or have lost or think they're going to lose or almost did lose. I mean, there's so much that people are feeling very, very strong, heartfelt emotions. And you can feel it out there. It's energy, a lot of energy out there of despair. But then there's a lot of so happy too. Oh my gosh. How many people have wrenched on motorcycles for the last 20 years and just this is the first time they've ever had a break, you know, and they go travel and see their mom who's dying or something like that. You know what I mean? They never would be able to do that. Those people are screaming oh God, thank you, universe, for giving me a break finally. And I'm sorry for the people who are hurting, but you know, I mean, dang, it's been years. So for some people, it's a very big experience, and it opens their eyes. It's eye-opening. So why not open them a little bit deeper and get some counseling? I mean, even if you're not on drugs and alcohol, maybe you need to talk to somebody. What should they do then? Do you know where to send them then, Donna?
I have tons and tons and tons of resources. Absolutely.
Is this on your website?
No, I would speak with you personally. See, I need to know what your needs are first. I can't just put up resources. I mean, of course, I have 800 numbers for suicide and Alcoholics Anonymous and this, that, and the other thing. But depending upon the person, I mean, I have personal resources. And so say I get calls and things all the time. You know, my mom is this, my sister is that. Can you help me? I'm in Texas. You know, and
it's
Right. So I have resources in different places, and I will forward them off. I will send them a number. I will call someone for them and that kind of thing.
Do you have any other counselors working under you to help you with the workload of phone calls, or do you just do all own assessment, you and your partner?
Depending upon what it is, I outsource. I don't outsource my coaching. But when it comes to certain things that I cannot handle, I mean, like I said, I'm not a doctor. I will outsource you to where I believe you can get your personal needs met. So if I have a man calling me about his underage daughter who's a runaway, he doesn't need coaching. He needs a couple of things going on here. A, he's going to need some help with parenting, for one. And two, he's going to need some help with where to place his daughter. His daughter obviously has problems, behavioral problems. She may have emotional and mental problems, and she could have a drug problem, but she needs to be evaluated by a professional who can see her in person. This is bigger than coaching. I also very, very rarely deal with minors. So depending upon what state she's in, I will look up and see who I know in that particular state. I also have a friend of mine who works with minors who helps deal with them and would know where and who would be the contact in that state. And so I would help direct them to go where they need to get what they need. You know. And
wow. I hope these people that when you send them to them that they are happy about it, or is it all about love in that kind of field? I mean, sooner or later, I mean, that's a lot of work, and, you know, you do have to provide for your own self. That's a lot of time and effort with all those phone calls and redirecting. So, I mean, wow, it is a lot you do.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's part of the business. That's what we do. That's exactly what we do. So, you know, any good person who works in the recovery field knows that that's, you know, what we do. Is that we have outer resources. You know, I travel and I visit different rehabilitation centers. So I get an idea if someone calls me and says, I have a daughter, I need to put her into rehab, where do I put her? Where should she go? And
have
it's not like Betty Ford is the best fit for everybody, because if she's young, that's not the place where she's going to benefit.
It's not. I know somebody who went there years ago, and they never did relapse. This was probably 15 or 20 years ago, and they're proud of it. They were so ashamed. At first, they were so ashamed. Don't tell anybody. And I said, hey, someday you're going to understand. You'll be proud. She didn't get it. She went through that whole program. She got out, and then she's like, wow, I did it.
Yeah.
I did it. And she goes, you're right. I didn't understand. I mean, when you're an addict, you're not seeing things clearly. And then she's like, I am proud. And then she shouted it to the world. Hey, I went to a recovery program. I got clean, and I feel great. And you know what? She shouted it out and was so proud of it. When I looked at some things that on the internet about how you help people, and I saw that you said that a lot of people are ashamed, but they should not be ashamed of wanting to get help, right?
Well, unfortunately, the mind of an addict or an alcoholic works completely differently than the mind of a regular person. So they're genetically made up differently, and they think differently. So the shame is usually part of the makeup, and that's just the way it happens. And it's just unfortunate, but it's true. So You know, everybody's different, and depending upon their past and what kind of trauma they have gone through is just what has to be dealt with.
What have you done as far as your training, education? What did you have to do to become a interventionist? Is this what you call what you do?
So an interventionist is different than a coach. I had to be certified. I went to Miami. I went to school to become an interventionist. You know, and I had to go through extensive training and tests and in-person training to be an interventionist. Now, an interventionist is completely different than a coach. An interventionist is when you, how old's your child? How old's your daughter?
13.
Okay. So say your daughter was 17, and your daughter has a severe drug or alcohol problem, and you need to get her into a program, but you can't. Have you ever seen Intervention on TV?
Yes, I really like that show.
Yes, interesting.
Good. Dr. Drew, right?
Dr. Drew, sort of. It's now done by a lady, I think. But anyway, it's okay, Barbara. Anyway, so what my job is to come in with the help and love of a family, work associate, whomever they choose, is to help get their loved one who's suffering to get to agree to go to help, get help. And that's basically what I do. Some people use the tactic of hardcore, if you don't do this, we're going to do that. I don't necessarily do that. I would say I am more of the kind that comes in with more of a love attitude.
You go to their living rooms? I mean, before Corona, the big Corona, the whole pandemic started.
Honestly, when it comes to life and death and drug addicts and alcoholics, Corona really doesn't matter because they're going to die regardless.
Do you still go to their homes then?
It just doesn't matter. So there hasn't been a lot of activity for interventionists during Corona. I have had to do some what we call transports after interventions, meaning we've had to go and pick people up and bring them to treatment. Recently I did that. I had to pick up a minor girl, a young underage girl from her family, and bring her. So I do what they call transports, because the girl cannot transport with her family because she will sit and cry and manipulate and cry and manipulate in a car for 4 hours, and her parents will finally say, no, you don't have to go. So it's
I know. Oh,
right.
She'll sob. She'll just
right. And you don't want to hurt your daughter. You don't want her to go somewhere, though we know it's best for her. But in the long run, it's like, oh, I know, honey. Okay, just come home. So it's best you leave that to a professional, and myself and another gentleman that I talked about who deals with minors will come and pick them up in a car and take them into treatment.
Oh, we had to do an intervention on my uncle.
Tell me about it.
Okay. Well, nobody could believe this was going on. He was a wonderful military, Navy veteran, family man, wonderful husband, wonderful dad, probably like, I don't know, 9-year-old daughter. Great, like always fixed the cars. Everybody always was cheerful. Janitor at the elementary school where everybody loved him and had a very good job. Oh, my gosh. He almost ruined his life. He almost lost that job for many years and just everything. He started doing crystal meth.
Right. Very addictive drug. Once you do it, the drug takes you. So
during the divorce. During the divorce. But then we found out that she was on it, too. So we don't know all the details of the private. I don't, as the niece, maybe my mother, I don't know. Maybe they told me. It might be boring. All I know is that I thought it was weird that he was on drugs because that was my uncle. That was awesome, you know? I couldn't believe it. But when everybody banded around and said, we are tired of this, it's ridiculous, he's ruining, I mean, my stepdad would get letters, I mean, the school, he was the emergency contact, he was almost losing his wonderful job that he probably would have retirement with and stuff. He was doing that just because of drugs. Got around the living room when he was visiting, and they went around with their each letter, and everybody was crying. Some people got into it, some people didn't. I just said, hi, Uncle Greg, this is weird, but don't be embarrassed, okay? Because I understand we all make mistakes. You know what? We're here. Just go get it fixed, okay? And he just started to cry. And they just took him right away to a wonderful place. And he has been about 10, 15 years now. Never, ever did that drug again.
Right.
So thank you for what you do. It touches my life. It touched my life so closely.
Right. So that's what I do. So I facilitate that. I put all those people together, and we get the person who needs to have the intervention. And then also sometimes when either an intervention isn't being done and they need to just be transported, whether it's in a plane or a car to a treatment facility, whatever, I transport. So we do all that.
You just go along with them? Do they want to talk to you?
Do they want
to
watch?
And you just know the right thing to say. Well, are they allowed to really, like, talk to you, or are they just like, okay, I don't want to talk, or...
Absolutely. Whatever they are most comfortable doing, it's always about the client. It's never about me. It's always about them, their needs, their wants, what makes them comfortable. Because they are really, really afraid at this point. Their entire life is changing. And when you're addicted, you have now taken away their best friend, their drugs and their alcohol. And it's their guise that makes them comfortable facing the world, and you're taking it away. And they do not know how to cope in a real world. They don't know how to have a conversation. They don't know how to dance without being high. They do not know how to show up in front of the family. They don't know how to work.
Right.
They don't really know how to function in the world without being high.
I'm thinking that is why, right when you get them, before the transport, right at that time, right after the intervention, they're totally high still. So they're making the decision when they're high, because they would never have come to see the family without getting high first. I mean, that's probably a given. So then that's probably kind of like wearing off. So, I mean, then right when you're getting to the facility, who knows, maybe their drugs are wearing off and they're going to start jonesing for them and want to get the heck out of there. Do you ever have that happen?
Yeah, I mean, all kinds of things happen. So that's when we turn them over to the facility, and they go into detox, and then doctors do proper medications. And that
do they have to be taken by force?
Sometimes not. It just depends. Generally not. I have a pretty soft hand, so generally not.
You can make them feel good. It's a 4-hour drive from where you are usually, and it's like, is it beautiful? Is the drive? Can you tell us where that you take them?
It depends where we pick them up. I mean, if I have to fly there to pick them up, and then we take them, it's prearranged. So it just
you must know all the facilities all around the country then.
That's what I was saying. So it's prearranged. I work with other transporters. So I have a really big network. I have a very, very big network of people I work with. You know, I've been sober and in the business a long time. So I have a very large network. And so, you know, I work. So a perfect example is I work and I would pack a bag for a gal. So if I went to pick, and it's always two people who pick somebody. So with a woman, I would be in the woman, and I would sit in the back seat with her, okay? And in my bag, I bring the softest blanket you could ever imagine. And I bring
snacks. Did she see your Playboy keychain?
Did you tell her?
You don't tell them you're a Playmate? That's too much?
Never.
Why? Just okay, maybe it's obvious, but I mean, I tell a lot of people, Just tell us why you think that that might be the wrong thing to do or detrimental.
It's not necessary because this ride is not about me. This ride is all about her comfort, her my whole objective is to get her into treatment. This ride
What if you become friends with some of the patients? Do you start talking about, what if they say, hey, you're an attractive woman, and it's a woman asking you this? It's not, I wouldn't be offended. And they say, hey, you're an attractive woman, were you ever a model? Would you say, yes, I was a model? Or is it just the Playboy thing that you don't want to talk about?
I would never say Playboy. I would say I was in the entertainment field years ago, and that's all I cap on. I never say more. I am completely
You don't want any triggering. It might trigger. It might be a trigger.
It's not, Barbara, it's not about me. I'm dealing with very sensitive, sick people.
Yeah, they are.
I'm dealing
It's wonderful with what you do. Donna, we really thank you for being on our show to enlighten us about what you do. We find it so interesting, and it would be an honor to have you on our TV channel teaching good techniques of how we can handle stress, how we can deal with anxiety at home, you know, without going to...
Would you be interested in that, Donna?
And then doctor, you know? Natural things. You know, I mean, breathing, exercising, pretending you're a turtle, stuff like that.
That's very funny. How about we just do like retail therapy?
Yeah.
I'll come down to Huntington. By the way, Barbara, I'm from Fountain Valley.
Oh, I love it down here. I chose this place. I didn't want to live in L.A. anymore. I wanted a beach life. I wanted a smaller, I didn't like the traffic, and I just liked the casual. Yeah. And a fan asked me the other day, do you ever go out without makeup on? I don't know why he would ask me that, because I have no clue, but of course I do. I go out
every day.
So casual. I love it. Yeah, every day. And you just wear your flip-flops and I don't even wear a watch anymore. I mean, I just love being the natural person. What about you?
Absolutely. You know, the man who co-wrote my book with me, Chris Epstein, he lives in Huntington Beach. He is very, very active. He also wrote John Oates' memoir right before he did mine, and he's busy right now doing Dave Mason's memoir. But he lives down in Huntington Beach, and so when I get down there, I always buzz around and see him. I have tons of friends down there, tons and tons of friends.
Oh, please. I have to get together with you when you come down, for sure. For sure, Donna.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's awesome. See, I love this Playboy Playmate series. What a great idea on life, laughter, happiness. You know, Playmates that I've always known about, but I never got to know very well. Well, hey, it's never too late.
Well, you know, let's keep in touch and we'll talk about it. Right now, I am literally, as we speak, up to my ears in boxes. And we're heading to Scottsdale. And so I've been doing tons of radio and tons of podcasts. And this is my last one until I get to Scottsdale. We close at the end of this month and off we go. We have not bought a house yet. And we're going to wait till we get there to figure it out. And we'll just go from there.
You're going to have a great life there. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Big homes. Just like I came from there for a couple of years. And it was a wonderful life in Gilbert. I still have a storage full of things, and my dad lives right around the corner, just like a coincidence.
Perfect.
So, yes, I will come. And after this coronavirus, or who knows, if I can just get my dad to visit me, but he's like, I'm old, and I am worried about the coronavirus, so I just want to come and see him. Then I will.
Right.
That'll be a while. You'll be settled, and then we can have a barbecue.
Perfect. Come on out. I'd love to have you, because we're looking at some beautiful homes on the golf courses right now, and we'll decide when we get out there. So, you know, that's what we're doing.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, it was so wonderful finding all about you and hearing some fun experiences and heartfelt comments about your life in Playboy, Miss March.
Thank you.
84. And Donna Spear, thank you so much for coming on. We loved it. You were
thank
so
you.
Interesting. I loved it. Johnny, that was awesome,
aww,
wasn't it?
Yeah,
okay, you're awesome.
Barbara, thank
have
you
a great
so
night.
Johnny,
you're
thank
welcome.
You so much.
DonnaSpear.com. DonnaSpear.com.
Okay, and we'll
bye.
Talk to you soon. Okay,
bye. Sounds good. Bye. Love ya.
Okay.